This update is brought to you by Reynolds and Power Home Team, Keller Williams Realty. In baseball, the big news today, Tigers star Tarek Skubal is scratched from his start today. He's headed to the injured list. He's going to have surgery on his pitching elbow to remove loose bodies. No timetable for his return, although in previous times, these types of procedures have generally carried a 2 to 3 month recovery time period. Nationals have the day off today. They'll take on the Twins for the first of three tomorrow night. Hockey playoffs continuing on tonight. Game two between the Flyers and the Hurricanes in about a half hour. Carolina up 1-0 in that series. Then the Ducks will take on the Golden Knights for game one of that series at 9:30. NBA playoffs tonight. Sixers and Knicks game one at 8 o'clock. Also game one for the Timberwolves and the Spurs at 9:30. Want to hear the fastest way to know what your home would sell for? Reach out to Empower Home Team. Simply text your address to 800-763-3000. No phone call, just text your address to 800-763-3000. That's 800-763-3000. From the Crop Medcalf 5-Star Sports Desk, I'm Toby Altizer on The Fan.
Nick Ashew on The Fan. We are less than a week away from the NFL or the NBA's draft lottery. We got the second round of the playoffs starting tonight. I'll take it. NBA playoffs have been great so far, haven't they? And it's quiet now. We're in that lull period for the NFL where now it just all becomes, well, rumors and Brandon Ayuk and A.J. Brown, George Pickens stuff and who's not happy where. But it's a quiet time, right? It's time to breathe. Time to reflect, if you will. I'm at Nick Ashew on all the socials. We'll talk to PJ Glasser coming up at 7. Look ahead to the draft lottery for the Wizards where we're all crossing our fingers. We're sitting there and we're waiting and we're hoping. We got all these teams in D.C. with a rebuild right now. You got the Commanders doing it. You got the Nats doing it. Starting to look at least a little bit better for them. And you got the Wizards where the trajectory of this entire team could completely change given to where they pick. And then given, of course, who they actually draft. And I've said this, obviously, about the Commanders, and the same thing falls true with the Wizards here, where you can have all the draft picks in the world, you can have all these great picks and whatever it is, but if you don't end up drafting well, it really doesn't matter, right? The same thing works for the Wizards. And I don't want to be that guy, but I am going to be that guy. None of the three teams with the best odds has won the lottery since Detroit did it back in 2021. The bottom three, you know, the three teams, 14% chance of having the number one overall pick because the NBA likes to smooth out the odds. And now they're like, oh, well, we should maybe do it again and just keep on doing it, keep on changing things. It's so funny. It's almost like when you tank, you don't necessarily get guaranteed the number one overall pick. But yet we're still trying to fix things if you're the NBA. It's better now than what it could be. But I get it. There is a lot of apprehension. There's a lot of concern from a lot of people that are Wizards fans, right? You're sitting there. I know it. I'm there too. And you're looking going, oh, God, we're closing in on this. We're closing in on that final week before we actually know for sure. This lottery and this draft that everybody's been sitting and looking at it, waiting and anticipating, you're actually going to have that result, right? But hear me out for a minute. Because, yes, no team in that bottom three, since they smoothed out the odds more, no team has actually gotten the number one overall pick in the last 5 years. And yes, we've seen jumps with Dallas less than a 2% chance. They went from 11-1. And we watched Atlanta go from 10-1. That's the last 2 years. But let's also remember Atlanta drafted Zachary Risacher, and he didn't even play. Didn't even play, by the way, as a number one overall pick in a blowout where at one point the Hawks were down 61 points. So if you look at where the Wizards are, they can't fall farther than fifth. Now, I know that's worst case scenario. But hear me out. Vijay Edgecombe and the Sixers have game one against the Knicks tonight. Vijay Edgecombe was not a number one overall pick. Now, again, we're talking a top five pick. We're talking a guy that's on the front end of the lottery. We're talking a guy that was still picked very high. But here's the thing. You can get talent and you can get immediate impact without having the number one overall pick in the draft. And I know everybody's looking at A.J. Abonso or maybe Darren Peterson. You're looking at the Wizards and you're going, oh, they look so great in a Wizards uniform. Yeah, and they were great in college, but there is no guarantee that just because you draft somebody number one overall that they're going to translate to that team, to the NBA. And I know it's different with every single player, but we've seen guys get drafted very high, including number one overall. And again, this is a draft that's very different than some of the others, but like Ben Simmons had a lot of hype around him too, and we saw it early, and he fell off, and I get it. Doesn't want to play basketball. It's very different. But if this works out to be something that is the perfect scenario for the Wizards, great. You get the number one overall pick. If they do fall, watch Vijay Edgecombe tonight for the Sixers against the Knicks. Watch how he's played in the playoffs, and he dropped 23 and 5 threes in a Game 7 on the road as a rookie. Keep an eye on all of that, and watch this series, and just use it as at least a way to make you feel calm, to make you at least feel like, hey, if the Wizards don't get the number one overall pick, there's still a lot of talent in this draft that could make a massive difference once you're actually getting to the season. So it's not always the number one overall pick that guarantees everything. And there's a great example playing for the Sixers tonight of what the Wizards could also get if they fall out of the number one overall pick. All right, we'll talk to PJ Glasser at 7, look a little bit more at some of those prospects as we're less than a week away from the NBA draft lottery. Nick Ashew on the Fan. So I found something that may not be actually in the category of draft grades, but something that I think is a good way to kind of look back at what the Commanders did and at least feel like it's a little bit more balanced. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Talk to PJ Glasser at 7. So again, I've said this many times. I've said this over the last week or so since we've had the draft. How long has it been? I don't know. It's all a blur at this point. I hate draft grades, and I know a lot of people do, right? You just look at it and go, okay, great. Commanders mostly got A's and A minuses for draft grades. What's that mean? I mean, we don't know what these guys, even Sonny Styles, are going to look like in the NFL. We hope, we pray, we want them to work, but it doesn't mean it's actually going to hit. Now, I do like when Pro Football Focus actually does, you know, their own level of evaluation. They put a lot of thought into stuff, obviously, and there's, you know, a lot of numbers and, you know, stats. If you're into that kind of stuff, it's there. But they did call them the most efficient team in the entire draft, the Commanders. Now, that I can get on board with, right? Because if you look at a team that went 5-12 last year, that was worst team in the NFL in total defense, and we know they couldn't tackle, and we know they were bad defensively, we know the Commanders couldn't do anything defensively, we know they had a ton of injuries and everything. We've talked about it so much it's exhausting to even think about, but it exists. But to look at them and the 6 draft picks that they had, and the dust is settled now, and now it's about hearing from Dan Quinn, who's going to talk again later this week, and, you know, Adam Peters, and yeah, they've said something, like where they are and what they think about this team. They're all going to say good stuff. We all know the coaches and front office is going to say, hey, good job, pat ourselves on the back, wash our hands of this, we're good, but that's fine. But the really important thing here now is that they're able to develop the talent that they actually have, so this efficient draft that Pro Football Focus ranks them at the top of the list for actually pans out and works out. And look, this can go two ways. Look, not every pick is going to hit. Not every free agent's going to be exactly what you hoped they were going to be. But you've got to start building a track record, if you're this front office, of actually showing that the players that you decide to bring on this roster, whether it's free agency or draft or whoever, are part of the long-term future. Because you can only spend the whole, like, rebuild and, you know, start throwing pieces in there randomly and one-year deals and prove-it deals and all that. You can only do that for so long. You can only have an old roster. We've seen that. They've moved on from that to a point. They've gotten younger. They've gotten faster. They've gotten more athletic. They've done all that. But, you know, they didn't address corner. We were really hoping that they were going to do that, I think, right? Or at least safety or something along that, those lines. And the secondary is still maybe an issue. But it is a defense that needed edge rushers, and they addressed that in multiple ways. The draft and free agency. Sonny Styles was somebody you just weren't going to pass on, right? You just weren't going to pass on a talent like Sonny Styles at 7. But now it becomes, what does the rest of those picks look like? Because here's the thing. We know that receivers don't have to be first-round picks to make an immediate impact in the NFL. We've seen it time and time again. Sometimes they do, but we've seen a lot of first-round picks at wide receiver that do not pan out. We've watched this team struggle to draft wide receivers with past errors. So the question now becomes, does Antonio Williams turn into the guy that is a part of not just an efficient draft class, but actually a draft class that does deserve an A or an A-minus. This is where all of this starts to come into play. You've got guys that check boxes. You drafted guys that fit needs. All of those are great. And every single thing that like they needed to do, given the picks they had, they did about 90% of it. Would have loved to see the secondary addressed maybe a little bit more, right? But that's about as far as it goes. Right now, confidence level of this team, I think if we were to look at win totals when they come out, and at some point we're going to be looking at maybe an 8.5 for this team, right? I mean, I think it's fair to say that the Commanders have built a team that's closer to a 9-win team. I had somebody tweet me over the weekend about you know, the Wizards, and like, what, how many wins seem reasonable for them next year? And it's not out of the realm of possibility that both the Wizards and Commanders can take massive jumps. They can. It's possible. Now, a lot of things have to fall into place for them. A lot of things have to go right, but that doesn't mean that that won't be the case, right? Because what you're seeing now is teams that are actually trying to do it the right way, trying to actually build so it's a roster, whether it's the Wizards or it's the Commanders. I put the Nats a little separate because this is a rebuild after a rebuild. It's a little different, though it's had a nice stretch of baseball recently. But like, this is a team right now in the Commanders and Wizards where you see the youth starting to get put in there. Wizards way younger, obviously. But you're seeing a plan start to come into place. Because it's one thing to just start throwing guys on a roster. It's one thing in the NBA to sit there and just play for the 8th seed, play for the play-in tournament. It's exhausting, and it's NBA purgatory, and you end up being the Chicago Bulls, who just sit there forever like they've been, and they never get anywhere. If you're in the NFL and you do a bunch of one-year deals, that catches up to you eventually. So we've now seen both these teams kind of around the same time turn the corner. Now, yeah, are the Wizards way younger? Did they bottom out a lot more? Yeah. But they've also got a chance to make a big jump next year. The Commanders have a chance to with an easier schedule. In theory, the Commanders also have an opportunity where they could make a jump. And I'm not saying get back to 12 wins, but what I am saying, 9 wins seems realistic, right? Realistic. Again, when the schedule comes out in a couple weeks, it's like, okay, we're going to play this game, and then we do the win-loss, and it's exhausting because we don't actually really know what these teams are going to look like on the field week 9, 10, and 11. But it gives you something. And you got to at least feel like they've turned a corner. But now it's proving that this front office can say, all right, we drafted these guys, but they got to hit. It's got to work. They've got to develop that talent. And it's the Wizards who are starting to see that talent development. Are the Commanders now also going to show that they can develop talent? And it's not just about, hey, we had a bunch of picks, and yeah, we checked the boxes, and yeah, they played the position we needed, but that's as far as it went. That's the difference. All right, we'll talk to PJ Glasser next. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan, brought to you by Melwood. Donate your unwanted vehicle to Melwood and support people with disabilities in your local community. They can pick up as soon as tomorrow. Visit Melwood.org or call 877-MELWOOD. Whew, the metal, man. You guys are making me want to jump through a wall with that. Whew, that'll keep you going, won't it? All right, we bring on PJ Glasser now. Game Day Garage, Westwood One Sports. PJ, you know what I always do every time we talk. I run a lottery sim. And I've run it twice so far, and the Wizards have fallen to fifth both times. I just want to point that out now. I'm hoping that you bring better luck when it's actually next Sunday. But, you know, we're less than a week away from this now, and there's a lot of hype around this draft class, and there's a lot of excitement around the talent that's there. The one thing I will bring up, Peach, is that if you watch the Sixers and Knicks, and you watch this series, and you watch what the Sixers did in the first round, VJ Edgecombe, who was not a number one overall pick, has had a pretty damn good rookie year for the Sixers. So if the Wizards were to fall a few picks, it may not be AJ DeBonsa. But again, we've seen this before where there's a lot of hype around guys coming into the NBA, but it doesn't mean that you have to have the number one overall pick to get the right guy. That's my positive spin on things. I hope that works for you too.
I agree with you, Nick, and honestly, if there was ever a year where the Wizards drafting 4 or 5 would be okay, I think this would be the year because there are just so many good players. And I mean, we've been talking about it really ever since the college season started all the way back in November, how good this freshman class is and how many just great players there are. I'm looking at a bunch of these mocks, and obviously it's, you know, some of it will be dependent on the teams and who's picking in certain spots, but consider you can get a guy like Darius Acuff at 5, or maybe a Caleb Wilson falls, or maybe teams are scared off of Peterson and he maybe drops a couple selections. I think they're really going to wind up with a good player. DePance is obviously the dream for me. That's the guy that I would absolutely take number one. But worst case, they do end up getting the 5th pick. I still think they're going to get a pretty good player.
What do you think of all the noise that was surrounding Darren Peterson towards the end of the college basketball season? I know once we got to, again, there were more minutes played, and it felt like it kind of quieted. Did it quiet enough where anybody should be worried about that whole thing at all?
I don't think so. I mean, the guy is so talented, and you saw it in flashes, and you saw it in spades, and all the opposing coaches that went against him talked about how great he was. There were a couple of coaches that compared him to Kobe. Like, they were the closest thing. He was the closest thing at that age that they had seen to Kobe. So, he's gotten some high, high praise. And I think he's going to turn out to be a terrific NBA player. I'm not as worried about him as a lot of other people are. Again, I would still take Devonta 1, but if the Wizards got the number 2 pick, Peterson would be my guy. I think towards the end of the season, you know, him playing in the tournament in March Madness definitely helped and definitely quieted some people down. But yeah, Nick, I would have no problem if that guy was a Wizard.
When you look at NBA draft prospects and what they do in college, obviously what they do on the court is one thing, but are there any other, you know, little intangibles, little traits? You know, I know you're not sitting in the interviews necessarily, but looking at a guy and saying he can translate to the NBA because blank, and it's more than just raw talent. What are some of the things that you look at that tell you that?
I think in today's game, you certainly want guys that can do multiple things. You know, you want guys that can make players better. I think in today's game, it's crucial if you're going to get a guy who's 6'9", 6'11", their ability to shoot the ball, especially from three, I think is big. And then if you're going after a guard, I think, again, a guy who can make his teammates better, who can not only score but can facilitate. And that's the great thing about this class. I think also you look at some of these top players that are coming out, and so many of them, it was really hard for them to get off good shots in college because the game shrinks. You know, teams are really locked in. As we know, the NBA, it's much more wide open floor. So seeing how if guys are able to really dominate at that level against college teams with scouting plans, when they're really locked in on them, if they're able to dominate doing that, then I think it should be able to translate to an NBA game. But I would say the biggest intangible I look for is just when you watch a guy and you can tell that he's making everybody around him better on both sides of the floor, that for me is probably the number one thing.
Talking to PJ Glasser here on The Fan, what do you think of the NBA playoffs so far, man? Here's what I will just tell you this. I am seeing something. Tell me if I'm crazy or if you're starting to see it too. I feel like, I don't know, we got a lot of playoffs to go, but if we look at the first round, there have been a lot of very heated games. I know there's some blowouts, but we've had some really competitive games, which is what some people have said in the past we haven't had enough of. It feels like players are kind of in that older, I don't like the person in front of me mentality versus, right, everybody was soft before. That was the narrative. It's like, oh, these guys are friends. Oh, they all want to play with each other. There feels like a shift in the NBA to me, PJ, where I look and start to see a little bit more of the, like, true heightened level of competition, where for a while it did kind of feel like it wasn't happening as much. Now, I know we don't want fights every single night, but we've had quite a few of those in this first round of the playoffs so far.
We have. I agree. It feels like the intensity level has definitely picked up in a lot of these games. I love the parity, Nick. It feels like really the last 7-8 years in the first round, we get 3 or 4 upsets. And this year, we got 3 series that went 7 games. And the Eastern Conference especially, I mean, how competitive those series were, I think we're awesome. So I'm really excited for a lot of these series that we have coming up. The Knicks Sixers series, which I know you're most excited for, is going to be a lot of fun. I think Minnesota San Antonio has a chance to be more competitive than maybe people think. Thunder Lakers is really the only one that I kind of look at that I say, that's probably a sweep, maybe 5 games at best. But I think the other series, Nick, would not shock me in the slightest if any of those 3 went 6 games or even the full 7.
You know, when you look at the Eastern Conference right now, I mean, we thought, I know I certainly did, before the playoffs started, I went, Celtics are going to run through this thing. They're the team I trust the most. And some of it is, you know, they've been there before. They've been there so often. Playoff experience really matters. But to watch them blow that lead to the Sixers, and I know they get Embiid back, and there was nobody on Boston that could stop Embiid inside. He just completely dominated them. It's kind of one of those signature moments for Embiid, but they're still a 7 seed. The Sixers are still a team that struggled in the playoffs, and we've seen that in the Knicks. On the other side of things, there have been 2 different teams, and they were down 2-1 to the Hawks at one point. Looking at this playoffs now, and I would even argue going into next year in this offseason, PJ, man, I see an Eastern Conference that feels really wide open, and I'm not saying the Wizards are going to win 50 games next year, but just hear me out on this. I think there is a path for the Wizards to be a team that could have significant noise made at least in the first round of the playoffs, right? Like, maybe they even get past the play-in and they're a six seed. I know that's a big heightened dream, but, like, it just feels like there's not a lot of teams in the East that you can trust, especially even down the road as they're building this team versus the West, the Thunder and the Spurs. Like, they're going to be there forever. It just feels different in the East.
It does, and what I think is going for the Wizards, too, is if they all have the season that we're hoping they do next year and they take that next step, their best players are going to be, or a lot of their best players are going to be veteran guys, right? You have guys like Trae Young that have been to the playoffs. You have guys like Anthony Davis that have been to the playoffs. And I think especially if they get the number one pick or they get a top pick, that's certainly going to help them bring in some veteran players off the bench to go along with the young guys. So in so many of these playoff series where we look at a team like the Pistons or we look at a team like the Hawks or some of these younger teams where they've had really good seasons, but we don't like them necessarily against these veteran teams. I think for the Wizards, they might be a little bit different because they do have some of those veteran players. But yeah, you're right, Nick. The Eastern Conference is so wide open. I think the Celtics are so fascinating. And Tatum and Brown have been together. You remember before that championship, we always looked at Boston as that team of doesn't matter how many regular season games you win. We don't know when they get to the series that they.
Oh, I think we lost him. Oh, did we lose Peach? All right, I think we lost PJ. We will. We'll see if we can get him back. See if you guys can get him back here. Oh no, he is. I heard one little squeak from him, and that's it. Okay, you guys even get PJ back on there in a better line there, better connection, if you will. We can do all these things with our phones, and yet for some reason, we can't have consistent phone calls. I mean, we've got all the technology in the world. We got AI doing so much for us. At some point now, all right, PJ, you back, buddy? You completely disappeared, and I missed half of what you said, but let's see if you're there again. Nope.
Hello?
PJ, you there?
Can you hear me? Nick?
Yeah, there he is.
Okay. It's like that commercial that we're on, you know, the Verizon commercial, God. I think. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
I mean, just forever, man. It's just, this is what I was saying. It's like, we have all the technology in the world, and yet we can't make clear phone calls. It just drives me, it absolutely drives me insane. All right, I want to kind of go off of what you said before your phone decided to crap out, because God forbid cell service could work anywhere in this country. You know, obviously, there are still a lot of questions around the Wizards, and I'm not going to get too crazy about how many games they're going to win next year, and again, we have a long way to go. But, you know, listen, high end, they get the number one overall pick. You got A.J. Tabanza, and he's a great player, and it works out right away. There's still the Anthony Davis question. And, look, he doesn't want to be there. And this is the way that I've kind of described it, PJ, is that Anthony Davis is the dude that's 45 and divorced, that's going back out on dates, and he really just wants to settle down and get his life back to where it was before. But he's dating a 25-year-old that's really smart, has a bright future, but she also likes going out till 2 a.m. And, like, that's not his thing anymore. It's two different points in life, two different life choices, two different, phases in life. So I understand why he might sit there and look and go, yeah, the Wizards have a great young team, but I need a team that's trying to win a championship now. Do you think that Anthony Davis is on this Wizards roster at the start of next season?
I don't. I think if they get the number one pick and they get the Bansa, that certainly helps things. But like you said, it just feels like Davis and the Wizards are kind of at different points in their life. Kind of doesn't feel like he wants to be here either. I know you and I have talked about this. I don't hate the idea of maybe entertaining a trade centered around him and Kevin Durant. I'm going to be that guy. But Nick, I mean, tell me, like, it does make a lot of sense. We know Durant loves hopping around and joining different teams, and he's entertained the idea of coming home at certain points in his career. And I think with what the Wizards are building, and certainly if they get a top player that interests him, I think it could appeal to him to come back. And then on the flip side, I mean, I think Houston would be a good landing spot for Anthony Davis. The Rockets certainly thought they would make a deeper run in the playoffs than they did this year. And it feels like after how kind of things ended with Durant and him just not being available basically for any games in the playoffs, they would maybe entertain moving on from him too. So I kind of think it works for both parties. But to answer your initial question, I do not think Anthony Davis probably is going to be on the Wizards to start the season.
And that's really where I am, too, is like I had this whole idea, like he's under contract. He should be here. Why? Like, honestly, I have no problems with them moving on from him if they get value in return. Now, I would rather see them get some sort of first round pick down the road, just because if you look at the Thunder, they've got a million first round picks and they just won a championship, could win another and still have a lot of first round picks to keep building that team out. The Kevin Durant thing makes me nervous, PJ, because we're seeing a track record here now. Anywhere other than Golden State, it's not a lot of winning, it's a lot of dysfunction, and it's burner accounts. I mean, the fact that we still have the burner account thing going on from this year as another distraction, apparently, that continued to happen in the locker room throughout this year. I mean, it's just never-ending. But the thing is, from a basketball standpoint, Kevin Durant would fit on this Wizards roster, and he'd certainly bring that perimeter score that they need. Here's the thing. Kevin Durant's one of the all-time great scorers this NBA's ever seen, PJ. But at the same time, it just feels like everywhere he goes, he's immediately not happy, and there's always problems. And he just kind of feels like one of those wide receivers in the NFL where you go, all the talent in the world, but why are you never happy with anything ever?
I know. I get it. And look, I'll compare it to what's going on right now with Philadelphia and Joel Embiid, where he's a constant question mark. We always go into the season every year with Philadelphia. You look at that team on paper, and there's a lot to like. But the question is, can Embiid stay healthy? Can he be out there? And when he is, I mean, look at how good it looks. Look at how good Philly's looked in the last three games. And I think all of us look at this series with the Knicks, and we're like, man, if Embiid can just stay healthy, I mean, Philadelphia, they absolutely can beat the Knicks, and they can go to the NBA Finals. I think it's the same with Durant, where I look at him as a player, and everything you said is true. But, Nick, it's a lot of ifs, man, but he's still one of the better scorers in the NBA, and if he's available, I definitely think he can help a lot of teams. So it's going to be interesting. He's going to be one of the huge questions of the offseason. Davis is as well. Giannis is also. But, yeah, man, there's so many players like that in the NBA that are such big question marks where if you are able to get them healthy and playing good at the right time of the year, they can do a lot of good things for you, like Embiid is right now for Philly.
PJ, I'm looking at odds to win the NBA title right now. No shock to anybody. The Thunder are the heavy favorites, minus 160. Spurs coming in next at plus 390, and then it's the Knicks at plus 950. The Pistons at 16-1. The Cavs at 19-1, the Lakers 40-1. It's like the Thunder and everybody else, and then there's such a gap even after the Spurs. The thing for me about the Spurs is that this is a team that hasn't been here before, and you've got to kind of go through those losses in the playoffs, and it might be Minnesota in the second round for them. I mean, the Thunder almost lost to the Nuggets in the second round last year. That went seven games. If I were to take the Thunder off of this for you, I'm giving you a free bet right now, Peach, so you got to bet anybody other than the Thunder. Who is the team that you look at that you would bet to win the NBA Finals?
It's Minnesota, without a doubt.
Wow, they're 80-1.
Which is why they're
going
to play for me. It's the price. Nick, so I was doing a show yesterday with Chris Mack on Westwood One Sports, and they were 150-1 at the time when, in comparison, the Lakers were 30-1 to win the title. And I said, Chris, now how can the Lakers be 30-1 to win the title when theoretically both teams have to go through OKC and then San Antonio, just like Minnesota is going to have to go through San Antonio and then likely OKC, we all imagine. How can those two teams, both one be 30-1 and the other be 100-50-1? This Minnesota team has been in the Western Conference Finals the last 2 years, and it feels like we aren't talking about that enough. Like you said, I get it. San Antonio, Wemby's arguably maybe the best player in the league already. They're a great defensive team. It feels like maybe something flipped with them in that game three of the Portland series and they figured it out. But Timberwolves are built for the postseason. They've proven that the last 2 years. Looks like Anthony Edwards is going to give it a go tonight. And even though DiVincenzo is a big loss, I still really like that team. It's going to be tough getting past OKC. But again, I mean, you don't like the chances of anybody getting past OKC. So if you're going to give me any one of those teams to beat them, I know the Spurs would be a lot of people's pick because they beat them 4 out of 5 times this year, but the price is the key for me, Nick. 80-1 on Minnesota. I just think that's way too long a price. So the Wolves would be my pick.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards, 100-1 to win Finals MVP, if you're even looking for maybe something else to dabble in there. Who did you say is out for the Timberwolves again? Dante who?
Dante DiVincenzo.
PJ, you're the best, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
All right, thanks, Nick. Appreciate you.
There he goes. PJ Glasser, Game Day Garage and Westwood One Sports. Yeah, this is after the Thunder, it feels like a wide-open NBA playoffs for so many reasons, but the NBA's kind of in that transition now, and at some point, shocker, LeBron is actually going to retire. And then the question is it's not about the team that takes over, because there have been plenty of, you know, early exits in the playoffs for LeBron late in his career like this, but, you know, who is the next face of the league? Anthony Edwards has been thrown around for that. You win a title this year if you're the Timberwolves, and that would make a massive, massive difference for that if he wants to build up his profile there. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Thanks to PJ Glasser, even though his phone sucked half the time. Drives me nuts, right? We've all been there. We're like, we can do all these things with our phone. You can start your car. You can order food. You can order a date. But yet you can't talk on the phone consistently anywhere around here. Nick Ashew on The Fan.
Did you say order a date?
Yes, order a date. You know exactly what I was saying.
Is that a thing?
Think about it. I'll let you ponder over that for a second.
You know, you can't order Uber Eats to the office. You know I've been through that.
Wait, specifically, what do you mean?
Did I not tell the story when I ordered Uber Eats and they drove to the office, said that they delivered it, and then they drove away, but they actually kept the food.
Okay, Wes, I need to know more about this. This is very important.
Yeah,
so we have security downstairs in the main part of the building where the our studios are.
Yes.
So,
but they didn't get out of the car. They drove the car to outside the office, and then it had delivered, but then they drove off with the food.
And what happened? Did you get an explanation? They just lied?
I got $5 back in my money back, and they gave me $5 off of my next order.
There was never an explanation as to why the food was never given to you? Because you know everybody else gets food delivered there, right? Like, it's not...
It's just me.
It's just you. Like, it happens all the time food is delivered there.
Oh, trust me. I see it all the time. Grant and Danny or the producers order the food all the time. Nope, but when Wesley Clark does it, Harold, Luigi, whatever you want to call me, it just doesn't show up.
I love that you went with a Luigi, by the way, because if people see what you look like, they'll know exactly who you're talking about at this point.
I was with Saban, and I think it must have been a Saturday, and I hadn't eaten. I had forgotten my breakfast at home, and I was dying. I needed food, so I ordered Taco Bell, and it just never came.
It just never came. So what'd you end up doing? Would you just eat something from the little cafe thing?
Yeah, I got pretzels.
Oh,
and then
so unsatisfying compared to actual breakfast.
And then had to I actually did order more Taco Bell after, and then a guy showed up on a bicycle.
Yeah, they're getting, you know what, let me tell you something, the deliveries on a bike versus a car, a lot faster,
obviously more reliable,
much more efficient. Yeah, and much more reliable too.
But it had actually happened to JP Finley as well. They had an event at his house, at the family house. They had ordered a bunch of pizza or whatever they ordered. And his brother told him, yeah, the Uber driver stole the food.
Wow.
So
that
apparently,
sucks.
Apparently it's an ongoing issue right now with Uber Eats.
Well, let me tell you something. When you're really hungry and then your food never shows up, that is brutal.
I was crashing out.
I'm sure you were. Were you grumpy?
I was hangry.
I bet you were. I get hangry too, so I don't blame you. It's fine. I understand. Yeah, I mean, it's when the delivery doesn't happen, because that's the thing. You get so it's like, you know, it's like you're at a restaurant and you order food and it just keeps getting delayed and delayed and delayed. You're going there hungry and you anticipate it. And it's one thing if, like, look, man, the kitchen's backed up and understaffed and it's crowded and it's whatever. Like, you can see that. It happens. Like, it sucks. But it's another if, like, the food just never shows up with a delivery and you're like, oh, I was not prepared for this at all. And I'll fully admit, I'm like you. I definitely get hangry and I just lose patience. I'm like, this is just the worst thing ever.
I get a little quiet.
Who gets quiet?
I get a little quiet when I'm hangry.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's good. There's one way to shut you up then. I'm glad we found something.
Don't
it's like
feed you.
Make you fast. You have to fast for an entire day so you'll stop talking. That's what we want. Well, that sucks. You just have the why do you always have the worst luck with things?
Dude, I had this laptop and I've had to trade it in with Dell twice.
Just because it wasn't working?
Just wouldn't work. And then the charger they gave me the charger they gave me with the computer doesn't work now all of a sudden, like 2 weeks ago.
I think you need to work on your positive mindset. I think you're clearly just not you're manifesting negativity. That's what this is. I'll be your guru here. I'll help you out.
I'm just living life.
Just living life.
Trying to go through the flow and I don't know. I did something in my past lifetime, that's for sure.
Clearly, you definitely did something. So I don't know what it was, but you just ruined everything, clearly. So I know this. I will never leave you in charge of anything important. That's for sure.
Because it'll ordering just food.
Well, definitely ordering food. That's for sure. Because you're the only person that never has anything show up. So that's very clear that that's the case. So all right. So what Joel Embiid said to Sixers fans and how that resonates with DC sports fans next. I'll explain. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Second round of the NBA playoffs gets started tonight. Knicks Sixers is the first game. That game tips off in about 30 minutes. And then you got Timberwolves Spurs. Game one of their series coming up, too. We get to see little Victor Wembanyama and Rudy Gobert. Longest wingspans we've ever seen in the history of mankind. Two wacky, waving, inflatable arm, flailing tube men just waving their arms around all series. I hope it goes seven games. I can't wait. It's been a good NBA playoffs. I do think that the Wizards next year can at least be in the play-in tournament, and maybe we're talking about them at least in the first round next year. I really do. The East feels very wide open right now, especially with what the Sixers did to the Celtics. I mean, the Celtics were up 3-1. Joel Embiid comes back and has, I mean, a signature moment in his career. It really was. I mean, for Joel Embiid to come back a couple weeks after an appendectomy and dominate the Celtics the way that he did, yeah, they got nobody that could stop him, but to put this Sixers team in a spot where they come back from 3-1 against the Celtics team that, I mean, listen, they got a lot of playoff experience, and that's a major factor, but it's not the only thing. Matchups matter, too. And, you know, this is a similar situation here now where even in the second round, Sixers-Knicks tonight, you're going to see a lot of Mitchell Robinson on Joel Embiid. But, you know, it's interesting. So Joel Embiid, from 2017 to 2022, 15-1 against the Knicks. Then they started getting better, starting in 2023. Sixers had problems. He dealt with more injuries. 4-8 against the Knicks since then. Also over that span, 2023 to 2026, only 12 games against them. Shows you how much time he missed. But, yeah, I think this is going to be a really good series. And, you know, it's been a competitive NBA playoffs. The East, we had two teams come back from 3-1 deficits. You don't get that a lot. I mean, for anybody that wants to talk about Stanley Cup playoffs and how great they are, the NBA playoffs this year gets to rival that. Sure, there's some injuries, and sure, there's going to be some blowouts. That's guaranteed to happen in seven-game series. But you're getting something that really matters. And look, Sixers-Knicks, there's a level of a rivalry that's there. I mean, remember the playoffs last year, and it was, you know, Knicks in five and, you know, Joel Embiid and the Knicks fans, and then Knicks fans taking over Philly and that whole thing, which is interesting because Joel Embiid, after the Sixers beat the Celtics and moved on, had something where when he said it, I thought of DC sports fans, and I thought of something very, very specific. But this was Joel Embiid after that win over the Celtics to the Sixers fans specifically.
I just have a message for our fans. Last time we played the Knicks, it felt like this was Madison Square Garden East. So we're going to need the support. You know, don't sell your tickets. This is bigger than you. We need you guys. The atmosphere that we've had the last couple of games in Philly, especially the last one, pushing it to game seven. I mean, we need all of it. I don't care if it's 70-30, you know, it's Knicks fans. They travel, they're going to buy the tickets, and there's going to be, you know, some people that need the money and that, you know, probably going to sell tickets. But don't do it. We need you guys. We got a pretty good chance. We're going to need our support. We're going to need them to be extremely loud. You know, If you need money, I got you.
I'll be honest, I pray that it's just a ton of Knicks fans there. Just because Philadelphia fans are so damn annoying. I mean, really, right? I mean, let's be honest with ourselves. We're not rooting for that to be all Sixers fans in that arena. And I know that's not till game three, and we'll get to that point. But man, when you got to plead to your fans to show up so that the away fans don't show up, it makes me think of how many different times we've seen that in, you know, when it was FedEx Field. You're still going to get a little bit of it now, I think, this past season, but they're starting to get a new level of hope with the Commanders, right? God, Nats games and Phillies specifically, or Mets fans, and who cares? It's the Mets, and they suck, and they're terrible, but you know, we've seen Phillies fans show up so many times, and Braves, and there's nothing worse than when your team is trash, and it just gets invaded by road fans. But at the same time, when a team is dysfunctional and it's a mess, as they were in the Redskins era for so long, man, I was begging people not to show up to games. Because there's a difference between playoff game where you need to be there and you want to see people supporting that team and you're winning and it's one, and then it's another when the team is a dysfunctional mess that can't rebuild and can't do anything right, then you shouldn't show up. Because the only way you as a fan can really make a point, can really essentially let an owner actually hear anything whatsoever, is by not showing up to games. That's where there is at least a visual that gets a point across. Now, in the end, if all ownership of any team, and it's not this current ownership group, obviously it's Dan Snyder and everybody in the past there, with the Commanders specifically, Redskins, everything, football team. When you have a dysfunctional mess like that franchise was at that point for so long with no direction, and nobody wanted to see the owner have any success whatsoever, but you're still making money. Some owners don't even care about that. Like, there are owners around the NFL that are just like, all right, well, we're still making money. People are showing up and overpaying for concessions. You gotta get to a point where it's actually embarrassing. And I'll never forget, and it was, I mean, when you had that one game late in the season, and I want to say it was, I mean, it had to have been even pre-Ron Rivera. It's probably Jay Gruden. We've had many times, so it's all a big blur. But when you had Eagles fans at the end of the season of, you know, a three-win season invading FedEx Field, and the team's bad, and the owner is a mess, and everything is just as bad as it gets, it's just makes you want to throw up. But at the same time, it does get a point across. Now, it's different. If you got to plead for fans to show up to a Commanders game and it's a divisional round game, that's a problem. And as of late this afternoon, I know it's a couple of games away, but apparently Sixers fans still have not sold that thing out yet. You're going to get a lot of Knicks fans showing up to that game. But it's good, though, right? It creates, there's a level of rivalry that's there with that. Even just when the fans are involved, it adds that extra level of emotion. It frustrates people more. It makes it so it feels bigger, and it feels heated, and it feels like that's what you want. And come on, New York fans and Philadelphia fans, they're similar. Like, Philly fans get a bad rap for a reason. It ain't like New York fans are, like, calm and quiet and subdued and everything either. So it's two, like, of the loudest, most vocal fan bases that we have in sports up against each other in this series. And it's just going to add to it. At what point, though, and I'll even throw the number out there, why not? 800-636-1067. At what point, though, is it going from sending a message to the team to it's your responsibility to actually show up if you can, if you have the tickets, obviously. Let's put money aside. Let's say for just general fan bases. For you as a DC sports fan, at what point does it go from nobody should show up to make a point to, okay, you should be there now supporting the team? Here's where I draw the line. When a team is rebuilding and has a direction, that's when it's, all right, they may be losing, but they've got a plan and then there's an idea and we want to support this team. Right? Like, I look at the Wizards now, and especially in the next year, showing up to games. It's not about, oh, they're losing. If they could start off, you know, 10-14, something along those lines, they're still a younger team. They're rebuilding, getting pieces together. That's where it goes from, this team is a mess, I'll show up to nothing, Redskins for years under Dan Snyder, to, okay, team is rebuilding, not a contender, but it's a team that's worth actually watching. That's where I draw the line. That's where I say, okay, now fans should start showing up Now we want to see fans there. Now we want it to look like there's actually a home field or home court or home ice advantage. Capitals are different, though, because, I mean, the Caps have been, you know, consistent as at least a playoff team until now, obviously, for a long time. Until Ovi's not there anymore, it's always going to be sort of about that versus any sort of a rebuild. And the Nats are different, too, right? The Nats have had a rebuild after a rebuild, which really is kind of like all the teams in D.C., Caps aside, but okay, so let's say the other three, if we really want to narrow it down, right? You look and go, they're all kind of rebuilding at the same time. The arrow's kind of pointing up a little bit. But there's a level of prove it that you as a DC sports fan tend to have. And I've seen that. I mean, I say you, it's me too, right? We want to see that this is actually going in the right direction, whether it's the Commanders, it's the Nationals, it's the Wizards. We're starting to see that a little bit, where it goes from like this feeling of boycott, I'm not showing up, they suck and they're dysfunctional, to, oh, actually, they may not be winning a ton of games, but they're fun, they're young, or this team is headed in the right direction. That's where you kind of swap it over. Because forever when you had Eagles fans showing up at FedEx Field, I'm like, okay, you know what? It at least shows that they're all there, and it makes a huge point because it stands out on TV and embarrasses the previous owner. That's good. But then you kind of cross that line and say, okay, now we got to support the team. So let me throw it out there. 800-636-1067. Where's the point? Where's the line where you say, now fans got to show up? Now fans got to support this team? I feel like we're kind of at that with a lot of the teams here now. And I know you may be frustrated with the Commanders and what happened last year, and there's more scars. But this was a good offseason, given the circumstances for the Commanders. I feel like the arrow's still pointing up. Arrow's still pointing up for the Wizards. And I'd argue arrow might be starting to slightly just... lean up a little bit for the Nationals, maybe, but a 162-game schedule, it's a long way to go. So we don't want to pass too much judgment on that just yet. 800-636-1067, Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I got to be honest with you, I could not care less about the Met Gala, and it is all over Twitter right now. I'm going to have to mute the word. Just don't. Everybody wears ridiculous outfits. I don't care. There's some people that care about stuff. I get it. It's just dumb. It's just, I've never been able to get into, like, the big celebrity news and gossip, anything reality shows, even. Just not for me. Just not. I get it. I got friends and dudes that are just like, I'm going to watch trashiest TV show ever, and they love it. More power to you. But man, I just cannot get into any of this at all. Everybody's just dressed like a psychopath. Like, most of this stuff looks absolutely ridiculous. Except The Rock. It looks like he's just got, I think he's just got a tux on. The Rock always just makes everything classy. So anyway, I couldn't care less. But yet I'm still here talking about it. So it makes me a hypocrite. So there you go. So I got a tweet from somebody over the weekend. I've been thinking about this actually a bunch because I don't know where the limit necessarily is. But, you know, the question was very specific, and it was, do you think the Wizards could win, like, up to 45 games next year? That's a big number. It's a big number. And, yeah, at the top of your head, you're going to go team with the worst record in the NBA, you know, record-wise. We know that there's more talent, at least there than that. You know, 17 to 45 wins feels insane. But if you actually look at the history of teams over the NBA over the last few years, like, it's not crazy. That big jump happens, and it kind of happens like that. If you go back, like, so the Thunder, the Spurs, the Pistons are all examples of that. And obviously, these are teams that are in the second round of the playoffs starting tonight. And the Pistons go from 14 wins a couple of years ago, the worst record in franchise history. There's usually change that's involved with whoever it is, right? It doesn't matter, but they hire J.B. Bickerstaff. Triples their win total the following year. Then they win 60 games this year. Almost lost in the first round of the Magic. Didn't crap the bet on that one, though, at least. Thank God for them. I mean, it was almost an absolute disaster. But, you know, they're only the second team in NBA history to ever do that in terms of tripling their win total. The Thunder, back at the end of the 2022 season, had 24 wins. You get some other pieces on there. They go from 24 to 40. They go to 57. They go to 68. They win a championship. They won 64 this year. The Spurs, not that long ago, Victor Wembanyama's rookie year, 22 wins. This season, 62. And they had a big jump in between there, too. I think it was 34. So if you actually look, the pattern is it does exist. Teams do have these big jumps in the NBA. And it's different, right? Because you see worst to first a lot in the NFL, mainly because schedule matters. Like, I don't like the game of win-loss, 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 and we sit there in May and we're looking at a team's schedule when it comes out. We know the opponents, but we don't. we don't know that much about these teams halfway through the season, but you always are going to get that worst to first in the NFL because there is a strength of schedule that gets factored in at some point because you might be playing a bad division that year. You're not going to see every team in the NFL. In the NBA, it's different. You're seeing every team multiple times a season, 2 to 4 times. So to really make that jump, it's harder, but we're seeing more and more of that now in the NBA where teams that are actually constructed the right way, they're built to just take that big leap. It's possible. Now, that's best case scenario. So let's play the game that the Wizards are a 500 team. I'll set it at 41-41 next year for the Wizards. For them to even get to that point, you got to nail it in the draft, whoever it is. And I'm not even going to say number one overall pick. No, I won't even do that. What I will say is it's got to be somebody that clicks with this roster. Of A.J. Tabanza, Darren Peterson, Cameron Boozer, it doesn't matter. Whoever it is, they got to nail it, and they got to be great their rookie year. So let's just leave it at that. You got to have Trae Young play efficiently, shoot the ball well, and he's got to play a ton of minutes. Because Trae Young might not be a guy that makes you a championship contender, but he makes you a playoff team. It's just you're upgrading a talent there. It's there. From what they were to that, that's an upgrade. Then there's the big question about Anthony Davis. And that's where it gets really muddy with this team. Because I don't think he's going to be on this team at the start of this season. I think he gets flipped. And maybe it's for Kevin Durant, because that's a thing now. But let's just say that whoever it is, it's Anthony Davis or someone else in a trade, that guy plays at has a healthy season, plays at a really high level, whoever it is. I'll even throw out another scenario. Aaron Gordon might get traded from the Nuggets. Did they get Aaron Gordon in a first-round pick from the Nuggets? Actually, that's not a bad trade. That's enough to get this team to a point where I think they're competing for a play-in tournament. If we want to hit that 41-win spot, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but it is a massive, massive jump. I think realistically, we're probably talking mid-30s, late-30s for wins. Team stays healthy. Alex Saar makes another jump from year one to year two to, you know, now year three. Had a big jump this year. Trey Johnson shoots the ball well. I mean, they're comparing him to Ray Allen, so he might as well turn into Ray Allen, right? If you do that, hey, that's certainly going to put this team in a much higher win bracket. If he's starting to play like Ray Allen, you got to listen to plenty of other guys on this roster. I love Will Riley. I think Will Riley could be somebody that takes a huge step next year. But a lot of this is, again, there's a million moving parts. That's why it's not easy. But if you look, the Thunder built their team through the draft mostly. The Pistons built their team relatively through the draft. There was some free agency in there. They're a little more of a mix. But their two most important players, Cade Cunningham and Jalen Duren, drafted. We know the Spurs drafted everybody. And yeah, they got Wemby, but What if whoever the Wizards draft in this upcoming draft has an impact the way Victor Wembanyama had? Different type of player, but same type of impact. The jumps happen really quickly. And again, 17 to 50, 17 to 45 is a lot. But this team stays healthy. The Wizards are a team that can be in that conversation as a play-in team, if not maybe. I'm not one of those ones that's willing to go all the way to like a 6 seed comfortably, but I'm also not going to rule it out. But it's possible. Like, it's not as crazy as it sounds, even with the amount of things that have to fall their way. Now, this year, for them to have been a play-in team, there is a big gap between the 10th seeded team and the first team eliminated from the playoffs. The Miami Heat were 43-39. The Bucks were 32-50. That's the difference between 10 and 11. That's not the way the East usually is, which is why I say, though, the East is still very, very wide open, where there's a lot of teams that feel like middle-of-the-pack teams that have a lot of questions that could really vary year to year. The Thunder, the Spurs, they're probably going to be there a while. The back end of the West, the Warriors only won 37 games, and they were the 10 seed. The Clippers were 42-40. They were the 9 seed in the West. So you have this back end of the West that you usually don't get. But it's just not out of the realm of possibility that this Wizards team makes that crazy jump. It's possible. But there's also a team like the Pacers that's going to get healthy next year and could make a massive jump from 19 to whatever. But it's not crazy. But we're right at that cusp. But if this team starts off slow, it's going to be harder and harder to get to that point. But again, the arrow pointing up, winning, That's what's going to matter the most next year. It's not about rebuilding next year. It's about now showing that that trajectory is actually going in the right direction. And that's all you can ask for. Yet, they're not playing for the 8 seed forever. This is actually about building a team that's going to be a consistent winner for a long time. And that's what everybody wants. DC is also Hoopstown. I just anytime anybody's like, oh, it's all about football. No, man. People care about hoops in this town, too. People care about basketball in DC. High school all the way up. I mean, it is... just you want to see some consistency, right? It's been a long time since we'd love to see Georgetown and Maryland have consistent winners year after year. Wizards, same thing. I've seen it. Remember John Wall and Bradley Beal in their prime. Took the city by storm. And then the rug was ripped out from under us. Ugh. Nick Cashew on the Fan.